You're listening to Life in Deep Ellum's podcast.
Hey, everyone. Hope you guys are all right. Hope you're staying healthy and sane. I mean, that's what we're all trying to do, right? Don't catch the deadly virus. Stay healthy. Self-imposed quarantine. Stay sane? Ugh. It's like we're all on a TV show, A Walking Dead. Except instead of trying to not get bit by zombies, we're all staying inside watching the movie Inception over and over and over again until we don't know what is real anymore. So, I hope you guys are staying healthy and sane. So, to help stay connected, which I believe is deeply important, it's not only just a spiritual practice, like it's what it means to be human. As Homo sapiens, we are wired for connection. Our Cro-Magnon brains are designed to experience community. So do me a favor, William. Let's reach out to a few folks. I'm going to join a couple text threads, say hey, say what's up, and let's help keep the fabric of our faith community knitted together. So reach out. So for the month of August, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. I'm calling it throwbacks. So our staff suggested that Rachel and I do a sort of greatest hits tour sermons that we've been preaching over the past 11 years here at Life in Deep Ellum. And I don't know about greatest hits, but Rachel and I thought about it. We asked a few people about sermons that have impacted them, ones that they actually remember. And so we decided to pick a few and redo them for this month. Throwbacks. So without further ado, here's my throwback from the spring of 2017. This was from a series we called Well. It was a series that we were focusing on community and how we grow together. We talked about how to say thank you. We talked about how to say I'm sorry. We talked about engaging people, embracing change, and the liturgy of celebration. But what I specifically want to talk to you guys about is help, the word help. Now, I grew up in a baseball family. So when I was younger, I played coach pitch, and I don't remember being a star on the team. Like, I mostly remember, like, picking dandelions in the outfield, like the rest of seven-year-olds were doing, drinking Shasta after a game. Do you guys remember Shasta? All the flavors. So I don't remember being a star, but my parents say I was pretty good, and so much so that when I was 9 years old, after my first season of kid pitch, three different teams wanted me to play on their team. There were the Lasers. This was the rec team, the recreational team that I played on for 2 years, and I was one of their best players. Then there was the Patriots, and they were the best team in the league, right? And they were going to be moving into a competitive division the next year. And then there were the Bears, and this was a new team, a bunch of buddies of mine that I went to school with who were trying to start another competitive team. So I have this vivid memory sitting down with my dad, and making three columns. One at the top was Lasers, Patriots, and Bears. And we went down and laid out the pluses and minuses of playing for each team. On the Lasers, I'd be one of the best players, so I'd get a bunch of starting time. Not so on the Patriots. Although we would win more games, I'd probably be at the bottom of the totem pole. And on the Bears, who knew? There was this team of kids that I kind of had so-so relationships with. What should I do? Long story short is I decided to play for the Patriots, and I joined their team and ended up playing for their team until I got into high school. But every year I did, I started at the bottom of the totem pole. My best position, as we found out, was second base. And guess who else played second base? The coach's son. Womp, womp, womp. So every year I did start at the bottom of the totem pole, but I loved it. I loved playing for the Patriots. Back to when I was nine and I made that decision, guess what my dad made me do? He told me it was my responsibility to inform the coach of the Lasers that I would no longer be playing for them. He drove me over to Coach Tim's house. And I remember standing awkwardly in the living room, like mumbling through some sort of explanation about my decision to leave the Lasers and join the Patriots. And I remember him smiling understandingly. Only later did I realize that my dad probably prepped that meeting, probably told Coach Tim all about the whole thing. And it's a fuzzy thing when you're nine, right? What's my responsibility? And what is my parents' responsibility? And I think my dad just wanted his son to practice accepting the consequences of his decisions, much like God does with grown-ups. All right, so what I want to do is I want to read a passage for you. Excuse me while I bend down to pick up my Bible. Oh, that was a long bend. I'm going to read a passage from Galatians. Galatians chapter 6, and I'm going to read the first 5 verses. Paul says, "Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. For each one should carry their own load." Let me stop there. You know, in our series, How We Grow Together, I'm going to be talking about this word, help. In other words, how to ask for help and how to give help without hurting. This passage is immediately what came to my mind when I thought about this topic. It's a fascinating paragraph tucked away at the end of one of Paul's letters to, it's confrontational letter to the churches scattered throughout Galatia. And I don't have time to fully break down this whole passage. It's clearly a passage about helping people who have fallen morally, helping those carry heavy burdens, helping yourself by not putting yourself into a precarious or dangerous situation. But the main point that I want to focus on is this seemingly different or seeming contradiction in verses 2 and verses 5. Allow me to illustrate. Verse 2 says, "Carry each other's burdens," right? Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. And what's the law that he's referring to? It's right there in the Gospel of John in red letters that a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, love one another. This is no small mandate, right? Paul is saying carrying one another's burdens is tantamount to obeying Jesus. Big deal. That's verse 2. Now verse 5 says, "For each one should carry his own load." Wait, what? Okay, so I have this responsibility to carry everyone else's burdens, but we're also responsible for carrying our own load. What gives? Is everyone just supposed to carry everything? Like, that's what we do? We all carry everything? How does that work? Well, that's my goal here, is I want to parse out the difference between these two seemingly contradictory statements. And here's the important part, to try to apply it to our faith community. How does help play out within community? How do we ask for help? And how do we give help without hurting? Here's the distinction in Paul's letter. In verse 2 and 5, he uses the same Greek word, bastazo. It means to carry or to bear. So bear or carry each other's burdens in verse 2. Bear or carry your own load in verse 5. So it's the same action. It's the same verb. It's just the nouns are different. This translation tries to distinguish it by translating it burden and load. But it might be more helpful to imagine two pictures. On one hand, imagine a bellman, which would be like, you know, one of those helpers at a fancy restaurant who take your luggage up to your room. Imagine a bellman who is carrying the luggage for a whole family. Almost a cartoonish picture of a mound of suitcases. You can't even see the bellman, only his legs and his hands. a burden. Now, on the other hand, imagine a medium-sized backpack that fits snugly on a medium-sized person. A load. This is the difference Paul is communicating. When someone is carrying a heavy burden, the bellman that you can't even see behind all the suitcases, this is clearly too heavy for one person to carry, right? The law of Christ compels us to help. But the image of the backpack is a rather down-to-earth reality. In God's great plan, everyone is responsible for their own backpack. All right, so sure, not everyone has the same size backpack. All right, it may seem unfair, but it's my conviction that to whom God has given bigger backpacks, he also gave broader shoulders. Right, these people are people God has gifted with more like internal resources, more talents, more capacity, and therefore more responsibilities. Jesus did warn us, to whom much is given, much will be required. But then there are those trying to carry heaping mounds of heavy burdens. And no matter how strong they are, it's too big for one person. Too big. So we'll discuss heavy burdens and how to ask for help in a bit. But I thought it'd be better if I started with the simple task of carrying my own backpack. What does that mean for me to bear my own load? Three ideas come to mind. God uses our personal backpacks to grow us. We hinder our growth by not carrying it. And we hinder our growth, others' growth, by carrying it for them. Right, so one, backpack carrying principle number one is God uses our personal backpacks to grow us. This is a deep, deep truth. It's one of the most reliable markers for maturity. Am I aware of what my responsibilities are? How well do I understand my backpack? It's a reliable marker for maturity. In today's world, this often looks like parents trying to teach their kids about responsibility. Right? Make your bed. Put that back where it belongs. Stop watching Netflix and do your homework. Right? These are all lessons that we're trying to teach kids so that they can become an adult. Right? Because when they become an adult, it's no one else's job to tell you to make your bed. When you're an adult, it's no one else's job to nag you to stop watching Netflix and actually do the work that's assigned to you. This is now on me. Right? It's my load to carry. And understanding my backpack is a reliable marker for maturity. Now, I'm not trying to minimize this. I'm not trying to say that carrying my own load is easy. Heaven knows it isn't. If it was easy, I'd never grow from carrying it. But we trust that God has given us and is giving us all that we need to carry it. And the longer we carry it, usually the better we get at moving through life with our responsibilities strapped to our back. So pack carrying principle number two is we hinder our growth by not carrying our load. Silly illustration, but if you call IT or technical support for your computer, what is the first thing that they will likely ask you? Level one tier support is, have you restarted it? Right? Have you turned it off and turned it back on? Now, I used to work at a seminary where the IT guys would get so exasperated by this phenomenon. According to them, most of their calls were problems solved simply by shutting down the computer and turning it back on again. Now, I worked at a seminary where many of the professors and the admin were older, particularly not tech savvy, as they would say. But not being tech savvy isn't a good excuse for this, really. Everyone is capable of restarting their computer. I mean, even if you're born in the 20s, I'm pretty sure you know what an on-off button is. That's a backpack issue. That's not a heavy burden. And when we are tempted to shunt our backpack issues off onto others, we rob ourselves of a powerful lesson. And here's the lesson. I am capable. I have all the resources that I need for this problem. And when we're faced with a problem, sometimes the simple solution is right in front of us. I like how firefighters, they talk about this. In trying to break down a heavy door, with their shoulders. You know, the firemen kind of lower your shoulder, literally pummeling their body into a solid oak door, when all you really need to do is turn the knob because it's unlocked, right? They have a saying about this. Firefighters will say, try, don't pry. Try, don't pry. Don't get the crowbar out yet. Turn the knob, right? I know you have a PhD in systematic theology, but don't overthink it. Just restart the laptop, dude. Now, problems aren't always going to be that simple, and that's why I'm also going to talk about asking for help when we need it. We'll get to that later, but I'm simply saying it's my experience that many of us are far more capable than we give ourselves credit. And if we get to know our backpack, our God-given personal load of responsibilities, it will give us confidence, ownership of our power, and we will grow. And the third pack-carrying principle is we hinder others' growth by carrying their pack for them. Yeah, a lot has been said and written about the dangers of enabling behavior, but it's a real thing. I mean, I've seen this in real life. And if not taking responsibility for my own backpack hinders my growth, you better believe enabling others hinders their growth too. You know, this is tricky for parents in particular because kids are not always capable of large responsibilities, right? Even teenagers' brains, they're not fully developed yet. But if we want them to grow into their God-given capacity, we have to let them carry things. And yes, it's hard to watch kids fumble with something that we could easily do for them. This is what my parents did for me, though. I had to take ownership of my decision to play for the Patriots and therefore talk directly to Coach Tim and tell him that I was leaving, something I didn't want to tell him. You know, when I was 12, I was still playing for the Patriots. And I played second base and was one of their go-to pitchers at that time. Like, mostly because I was super accurate. I wasn't fast, but I could throw strikes, and that really matters when you're 12. I threw junk pitches, I threw sliders and knuckleballs. It was such a good time. But I remember that we were playing in one tournament, and we were tied, and we were in extra innings, and I was on deck. And that means I was next up to bat. And there was a guy on third base, and there was one out. So if someone got a hit, that would drive that guy in and we'd win the game. The guy in front of me struck out. So immediately, two outs, I'm next up to bat. And it's like, if I get a hit, we win the game. If I strike out, another inning. And I've been in like a hitting slump. And I don't have a lot of confidence because I haven't been hitting well. But I'm like trying to pump myself up. All right, it's my turn. It's my turn to go. Then I hear my coach yell out from the dugout. He calls me to come back. And he puts in a pinch hitter. And I sit there in the dugout as one of my friends goes up to bat for me, gets a hit, and wins the game. I have never been more humiliated. I was 12, right? And part of me was happy. I'm glad we won. And I'm sure I smiled and stuffed all those feelings way down deep. But I also felt that experience as my coach in front of everyone else openly demonstrated his lack of confidence in me. I played for that team for 4 years, and I can't remember there ever being another pinch hitter. You know, I'm glad we won, but I was just hurt. And the car ride home, I cried. And I'm sure it was hard for my parents to watch me cry. I'm sure they were mad about it too. Like, I'd be pissed off if some jerk pulled that on my son. Will, we're just trying to be competitive. Come on, they're 12 and you sell tires for a living. Get some perspective. I don't have any resentment about it at all. But when I was crying in the car on the way home, as hard as it was for my parents to watch, they decided to not call the coach and to gripe him out, right? They actually suggested that if I felt so much sadness about it or anger about it, that I should call him. So there I was. 12 years old, on the phone, expressing my disappointment and embarrassment to the assistant coach because I didn't have enough guts to call the head coach. But my feelings are my backpack. Did you hear that? My feelings are my backpack. And my parents somehow knew this. And I still struggle with this lesson. I hate it. I don't want to be responsible for my feelings. I want other people to be responsible for my feelings, right? But when we try to help others, we are enabling them. Or are we empowering them? That's the question. Is my help enabling them or empowering them? And if I take responsibility for their feelings, that's enablement because it robs them of the opportunity to be responsible for their own feelings, to own their own power. You know, when we're talking about help, the difference between enabling and empowering has far-reaching consequences, friends. It can literally shift the trajectory of a person's life. Now, not all packs can be carried by one person. Some things are heavy burdens, and sometimes those are just the things, the circumstances that we're born into. And those things by themselves are heavy burdens. They're just too much for one person to carry. And there's a reason why the New Testament speaks so regularly of the needs of widows and orphans, right? Because in those days, society had stripped them of any power to generate income. Right? There was no government programs to provide food and shelter for the poor in the first century. Right? They needed help. What Paul calls fulfilling the law of Christ, the Apostle James called true religion, which he defines as looking after the widows and the orphans. Right? So this is where the line between loads and heavy burdens is drawn. If the load exceeds the ability for me to carry it on my own, I need help, and that's okay. This isn't a medium-sized backpack at all. It's a mountain of suitcases that no person is capable of carrying up multiple flights or navigating the hallways of life with. All right? And many of you have experienced this kind of burden. All right? Maybe it was the grief of a dying loved one. That is a heavy burden. Maybe it was the relentless fear of not having enough money to pay rent or buy groceries to just survive. That is trauma and a heavy burden. Maybe it's an addiction, a single-parent home, a physical disability, or maybe your car just broke down and you have no options of getting yourself to work or to a doctor's appointment. All right, so quick question. How many of you would admit that it's hard for you to ask for help? My guess is many of you are like, maybe? It's common. I read this blog the other day, and I just want to run through it to you. It talks about five reasons why we often don't ask for help when we need it, and it all has to do with fear. The first one is fear of being a burden, right? We don't want to add to others' plates, right? So we tell ourselves, I'm sure she has better things to do, or I don't want to be a burden, right? Two is fear of admitting that we are out of control. We don't ask for help because that means we're admitting failure. That no matter how hard we try, we can't stop running up credit cards or looking at porn or eating Rice Krispie treats for breakfast, right? So we keep it to ourselves. We don't ask for help and we never reach out because we're afraid of admitting we're out of control. Three is fear of owing a favor, right? Some of us don't like to feel like we're in debt to someone, like someone being one up on us, all right? So we pull up our own bootstraps. We try to convince ourselves that we are the exception to the rule and we don't need help. Four is a fear of appearing weak, right? This is about managing people's perception of us. We don't want to think we're needy or incompetent or stupid. Take your pick. So instead of asking for help, we try to convince others that it's their responsibility to help us, right? That way we can get the help that we need without appearing weak. Fifth one, fear of rejection. Asking for help is putting yourself in a position of vulnerability. And if someone declines your request for help, that can feel pretty awful. So to simply avoid being rejected, we don't ask. It's like the crush in high school, like they can't reject us if we don't tell them we like them. So we have these fears. And back in 2017, I did a text poll. Remember those? Oh, they were so great. So instead, I just want you to consider wherever you're watching this, what is the fear that keeps you from asking for help? Is it a fear of being a burden? Fear of admitting you're out of control, fear of owing a favor, fear of appearing weak, or fear of rejection? Which one or two or all resonate with you? And there are a lot of ways we can address these fears, right? We can remind ourselves that most people like to help, right? We can remind ourselves that being supported and connected isn't actually a weakness. You can remind yourself that rejection to a reasonable request is a reflection on you, right? There's all kinds of things, but here's the bottom line. Some burdens are too heavy for one person to carry, and our brothers and sisters in Christ can't read our minds. Like, that's not a fruit of the Holy Spirit, mind reading, okay? They can't read our minds. So when we're crippling under a heavy burden, we have to tell people. So this is where it circles back around to the backpack again. Part of our personal responsibility, part of our backpack, is that we need to know when to ask for help. That's our job. No one can ask for help for you. We have to do it. In fact, if you are under a heavy burden, it is likely someone has said to you at some point in time, hey, if you need any help, please let me know. And when that happens, here's what you do. One is you assume they're being sincere, right? They probably meant that. Two, take responsibility and follow up. It's not their job to nag you about it and convince you to ask for help, right? It's your job to think that through and follow up with them. And three, make a request and be specific, right? Don't say, I could use some help lightening the load, right? That's fuzzy, right? Say, could you bring dinner for my family every other Wednesday, right? People are far more likely to help if the request isn't fuzzy. And if you're afraid of rejection, which is normal, I get that, just acknowledge it and say something like, I'm really hesitant to ask this, but would you be willing to give me a ride to work this week? You know, back when I preached this sermon, Mimo was on staff, and I told a story about how I was getting overwhelmed at trying to work out some of the issues around city permits, certificates of occupancy. It's maddening to work with the city. It's not my strong suit. And I was embarrassed to ask Mimo for help because I felt like I should be able to do it, right? But clearly, it was too much for me, so I asked for help. And he totally did, and it was awesome. But I want to update my illustration. Nowadays, we have another person on staff that is a big help to me, Chris Baca. And as the administrator of the Cultural Center, he has regularly told me that he wants to help lighten the load for me. And if you don't know this about me, I am not great. And by saying not great, I'm terrible at delegation. And I think deep down, like for me, it's a sign of incompetency. It pokes at my insecurities. And if I ask for help in those ways of something that's kind of on my job description, I feel like I'm showing that I'm incompetent, that I'm weak, that I can't do it on my own. And it's irrational, right? I talk about it with my therapist, okay? But there it is. So I'm leaning on Chris. I'm leaning on his help. And that's my job, to bring that up and to ask for help. And whether it's taking care of tedious details about our facilities, joining me on a podcast, or even stepping in to preach a sermon, all right? Chris is stepping up and helping. It's awesome, right? So mad shout outs to my buddy Chris. Ultimately, we want this to be a safe community where the law of Christ can be fulfilled. This doesn't mean that we help carry each other's backpacks, right? That doesn't help. In the long run, it actually hurts. It's counterproductive. But when there are heavy burdens, too big for one person to carry, I pray that this be a place where people say, hey, if you need any help, let me know. In fact, if you get our weekly update emails, which I hope you do, there's a whole section about this. Every week it comes out to you. It's called Community Care. And there's a button where you can literally click it, and it says, ask for help. Could you be more literal? No, just ask for help. There's also a button next to it that says, offer help. There's even a button that you can just simply make a prayer request. There are people in our community who are offering help, friends. So I challenge you to assume their sincerity. Then take responsibility by following up. Click that button that says ask for help. Make a prayer request. And don't say something fuzzy, guys. Make a specific request. It's okay to have a heavy burden. That is not a flaw. That is just something that you've been given and that those of us in the faith community alongside of you want to help with. So, step out. You may just be surprised by how much grace and generosity there is flowing through this beautiful faith community. I love you guys. So now to Him who is able to keep you from falling, to present you before His glorious presence without fault and with great joy, to the only God our Savior be glory, power, majesty, and authority through Jesus Christ our Lord, now and forevermore, throughout all the ages. Amen. Blessings, guys.